Welcome to the History Explorer Meet Our Museum podcast, brought to you from the Smithsonian's National Museum of American History. When learning about American history, it's very easy to get caught up in the big stories. Wars, presidential elections, inventions that change our daily lives. While these are undoubtedly important, it's oftentimes the lesser-known stories that offer the best understanding into our American past. In today's episode, we visit the museum archives, where archivist Reuben Jackson shares his passion for collecting materials that feature these overlooked or smaller stories of American history. According to Reuben, it is these undersung stories that add to the bigger picture and are often just as interesting. Reuben presents the scrapbook and photo albums of the Sioux City Ghosts, an African-American traveling baseball team and swing band from the 1920s and 1930s.
My name is Reuben Jackson. I'm an associate curator here at the Museum of American History. I've been here 21 years, and one of the things I've learned about collecting and the role of collecting as an archivist and its relationship to the museum's mission and the types of materials we do collect is that the journey is multi-layered. You've got the desire for more material, which of course any museum wants to amass, but one of the joyous things for us as employees of the Smithsonian is in looking at materials which both add to the American story, for want of a better word, and also intersect with, again, the types of things which have been collected here, things such as technology, popular culture, any social movements which have occurred throughout the history of this country. This particular collection is, I pulled it up for two reasons. A, I love it a great deal, but I think it also proves that bigger is not always better or necessarily more informative than something which is smaller. And the collection it's the scrapbook and photographic albums of an ensemble called the Sioux City Ghost. And the Sioux City Ghost were a combination of African-American traveling baseball team and swing band, and they toured the United States in the 1920s and 30s. They were often compared to basketball's Harlem Globetrotters because they played well, but they did a lot of on-the-field antics. A lot of the names of the players are also, I guess, comedic, you would say. But I found this an interesting collection, A, because of my interest in baseball. And the initial presentation here at the museum was done to coincide with baseball season. This took place right around the time of the All-Star break. But I think one of my obsessions really is in looking at the undersung or lesser known stories. Many of us look at history as kind of a great man, great woman story. At 5 o'clock at some particular day, someone discovers thus and such, and then the world has changed. But this job has taught me many things. One of those things is the fact that history is a lot more contradictory than that. Consists of a lot of people who are not necessarily well known. It's a messy and sometimes joyously messy process. This was an ensemble which I jokingly referred to as multitaskers because they could, they would do concerts and they would play baseball. They were African American traveling during a time when the Jim Crow or segregation laws in this country were very much in place, but not unlike, say, the Duke Ellington Orchestra, another collection housed here in the Archive Center at American History. They found a way to reach audiences, black audiences, but audiences beyond the African-American community. They traveled in Utah, Mexico, Canada, places like that, Iowa, places which did not have large African-American populations. And this collection consists of, again, talking about the proof that something which is, quote, small isn't necessarily of comparatively lesser value. It's one scrapbook and one book of photographs. In the scrapbook, you have ball games. There are scores, of games written down by players. And there are photographs of the band members, their wives, in the baseball uniforms, in their swing band uniforms. And, these, again, thinking about the layered lessons one can find within collections, how much we learn about not just the places this ensemble traveled, but clothing of the period. There are also some concert posters, small concert posters within the collection, which tell us about, you know, marketing, because another thing this museum looks at is the, you know, the branding, if you will, of whether it's music or any other form of business. And, you know, then they had to figure out a way to market themselves so people would come. And, you know, within this collection, you can see kind of the evolution of the ways in which African-Americans were viewed. So it's, and one of the things that's remarkable, again, given the time period, 1920s, 1930s, is the fact that this, there aren't any stereotypical images of this ensemble within the promotional materials. There's a lot which attest to their, you know, their prowess as ballplayers and musicians, which would make sense if you, again, you're along the lines of someone like the Harlem Globetrotters. And, you know, within this mastery of two forms, you've got some humor and, you know, the entertainment side. But that, too, is tells us a lot. And the collections themselves should tell stories without having to hammer us over the head. And I think this is a great example of that, you know, again, with publicity, personal recollections, and with things like that, you can, you know where they went, you know a bit about the way in which they were promoted, and it tells you something about a time in American history. And you know, and again, whether it was the 1920s and 1930s or the 1700s, we know that time, certain things existed. But I think one of the joys of this, of history and of the materials here in this museum, is you want to kind of widen the highway as much as you can. So if you've got, you know, maybe a farmer in some place in Iowa in the 20s and 30s, but you've also got another slice, the Sioux City Ghost, those stories add to the, quote, big story, you know, the American story. Not to thumb my nose at the more celebrated, you know, big figures in history, but I think what I have learned also in giving these presentations is the fact that people who respond begin to understand that maybe something their grandfather did or their aunt did, something in, you know, the proverbial collection in the attic is could be of interest. And I would say if I have a personal torch to carry, it is in attempting to kind of open, broaden the dialogue and open the doors for people to let them know that, as a poet once said, history is your own heartbeat. And if it's not yours literally, it could be that of your aunt who was, you know, a whack in some small town in Arizona or what have you. And that history is not just these, you know, profound and understandably celebrated events, the Boston Tea Party, the Montgomery bus boycott, because even those events were peopled by individuals, you know, many of whom, whose names we don't even know. So what does that say about us? What does that say about, again, that kind of, I call it like that kind of glorious mess that history can be. And again, I think this collection personifies that. And that's why I love doing, that's why I wanted to present it. And that's why I think it, like so many things, like everything in this museum, is of value and importance.
Where did the scrapbook and photo albums come from?
That's a good question. And I think that to me is another part of the fun. One of the members, one of the surviving members of the Ghost, who lived in Iowa City, contacted the museum and said, again, and it sounds like almost that central casting story you hear about museums, that, you know, his father had been a member of this ensemble, and, you know, is this something the museum would be interested in? I do a lot of reference work in the Archive Center here, and I would say on average you get probably, you know, a dozen phone calls like that a week of people. And this guy was no different than any of the others in that there was a kind of self-effacement involved. And I think his self-effacement in part was based upon what I talked about earlier, the fact that maybe he saw history as, you know, the event with 10 exclamation points after it, and not something which I would say is profoundly, quietly, but profoundly important as this collection. So, but it was donated by the son of a member. And that's, for every collection here, whether it's in the Archive Center or one of the other curatorial units, obviously there's a story behind it. But I think where our lifeblood largely consist of people like this who will call, or if they're in town, maybe they'll ring the doorbell in the archive center and say, I've got something which may be of interest. And for me, it's always kind of fun when they'll say, well, I don't think it's any big deal. It's just a bunch of photographs in a box. But I thought, well, I should get it out of the house. And then they see our eyes get real big and they think, oh, maybe they've hit the jackpot. But to say, yes, you know, let's talk about this and let me explain how this also fits into other collections housed here.
So what can this scrapbook teach students about African-American history and the U.S. during this time period that they might not have learned about in their textbooks?
I think one of the biggest lessons this collection, among others, can both introduce and maybe illuminate is that there are stories beyond the stories that we are introduced to. I mean, whether it's students of all ages, as they may say on a toy commercial. And again, another reason I chose this collection was because it's, well, baseball is not uncommon, certainly, race notwithstanding. But again, you know, it's, you kind of get a lot of the basic, you know, you'll get people who lived in urban areas, the great migration from, you know, the South to northern cities, Chicago, et cetera. And that's all very important. I'm not casting any value judgments on that. But I think this provides, again, another piece of what was, like all history, kind of a broad and both complex and sometimes profoundly simple story. But you don't always, sometimes I think in addition to this collecting thing, I probably have some kind of, there's some screenplay in my head, some unwritten screenplay in my head. And I think, you know, if I were a filmmaker, in addition to, you know, this history bug I've had for years, I would be interested in trying to document whether it's a documentary or some dramatic adaptation of an ensemble like this, because it's what you don't see so much. And I think, so maybe that's the simple answer. It's because it's what you don't, this is a story you don't necessarily see in books or hear in lecture halls. And any addition, as I said, is I think beneficial.
And finally, what's the most exciting part about being an archivist here at the museum?
Meeting our public. I've always enjoyed that, even though I'm kind of a paradox. I'm the shy person with a big mouth, you know. But that, and I would extend that, because meeting the donors has been inspiring to me in many cases and very educational. What I've come to see is that people, in many cases, collections like this are the last tangible remnant of, you know, if it's a spouse or a parent. And so you learn, again, another connection there, that it isn't just stuff in a box. It's for someone maybe like myself who wasn't around when the Sioux City Ghosts were active. It's something I may have heard about. It might be, like the students you're alluding to, it might be a chapter in a book. But this relationship, I think, brings kind of the flesh and blood back, or in the case of this collection, it, you know, you can kind of sense the dust on the cleats and all that. And so that's, it's taught me a lot about, even though this is not our you know, official mission, but it's also, it taught me a lot about kind of the, how quickly life passes and how young this country is too. Because you think, you know, for a tree, if you say 1925, like, you know, a tree that's 150, 60, it kind of, it's not even adolescence. But you see how much has happened within the United States in a relatively short period of time, and certainly in comparison to countries in Europe, places like that. And and that too, I think, is part of that, as I said, that glorious messiness, because you've got, you know, how did this group travel? You know, they traveled by bus, and then they were able to get these Pullman cars, like some of the black big bands would have, because that way they didn't have to deal with being turned down at restaurants. It was kind of a self-contained unit. But so all that is part of this big story.
I'd like to thank Ruben for taking the time to discuss this interesting piece of American history with us. A story like the Sioux City Ghosts helps remind us that history isn't only the stuff of textbooks and documentaries. Sometimes history occurs in the lives of regular people, and it is the lives of these people that are intertwined with the bigger stories. For the Meet Our Museum podcast, this is Matt Ringelstetter. Thanks for tuning in. This podcast has been made possible by a generous grant from the Verizon Thinkfinity Foundation. Creative Commons music provided by the _ Orchestra. To hear more of them, check out freemusicarchive.org.